Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Quit it now. Third
down and four from the 21. Field, backside pressure. Down he goes. Danielle Hunter with the sack.
Third and eight, Stroud delivers right on the money, and that goes to Tank Dell. Dell makes his way into the end zone, eluding tacklers for the touchdown. It's C.J. Stroud to Tank Dell.
It's football time in Houston. All right, what's up, Houston? Bullpen here with Sean Mapes, Cam Smith, and Brian McDonald on the amazing vocals to start the show. I don't think I have quite Paul Gallant hot pipes when he bust out the football time in Houston, but I was proud of that.
No, you're after Paul, obviously after Clay Walker, but you're in the mix.
Did you put Paul above Clay Walker?
It flip flops.
It depends on the day.
Yeah.
Drive me smooth, mother. All right, so you heard the sack from Danielle Hunter and the touchdown to Tank Dell last night. Obviously, the starters we just saw on the screen here as we're watching the replay here in the ESPN 97.5 studios. And welcome into the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. If you want to give us a call on the HRMP listener line, or if you want to send us a text, please do so. We'll talk lots of Texans and Astros this hour. 713-780-3776. But as you heard coming in, the sack from Danielle Hunter, the touchdown pass to Tank Dell. Obviously, the starters didn't play very long, two series each for the main starters on offense and defense. But look, I mean, you're not really looking for much other than don't look bad in the first action and spring training. But there's a few guys, and we'll start with the first highlight there, Danielle Hunter. He not only didn't look bad, he looked absolutely dominant. I believe going up against the first-round pick out of Oregon that the Steelers are playing at left tackle, or I believe that's who he was going up against. I forget the name. Fanu?
Oh, Fashanu?
Yeah. Anyway, but Danielle Hunter, I mean, he had the tackle for a loss. He had a sack. He had a QB pressure. Just absolutely pushing the pocket, causing all sorts of havoc in the Steelers' backfield. And he's one of those guys. And this is just kind of like an eye test thing, but when you see Danielle Hunter out there, he just looks different than, I mean, because they're all huge men in the NFL. Well, outside of Tank Dell, but they're all huge men in the NFL. But when you see Danielle Hunter, it's like, oh, that guy's not just an NFL player. That guy is a dude. Like kind of like the scene from Infinity War when Thor's on the ship with the Guardians. Like, that's not a guy.
Yeah.
That's a dude.
Yeah. He's definitely one of those. Yeah, he's one of those guys that he sticks out in a league full of freaks. He sticks out as a freak.
Like Miles Garrett.
Yes.
Very Garrett. He's in that kind of class of just, I guess, like physical specimen.
Yeah, like when I didn't even have to look for like the number to know where Danielle Hunter was lined up. It's like, oh, that's Danielle Hunter right there. Like even before he was even running by the tackles, like, just lined up in his stance. It's like, oh, that's a dude right there.
Yes. Also, it's Troy Fontenot, not Olu Fashanu. two different guys.
Interchangeable.
Oh, the rookie.
Yeah.
Rookie. I mean, you would expect a guy like Danielle Hunter to abuse a rookie, but he abused a rookie last night in those two series. So Danielle Hunter, so far, obviously the earliest of early returns, looks absolutely fantastic. I think there was a few people when the Texans got him, like, he's almost 30. Like, maybe did we sign him for, like, you know, kind of the downward part of his prime? Is he, you know, we'll see. But he's coming off of 16 and a half sacks last year. But he looked absolutely fantastic. And the defense overall, I thought, look, on the Glott and George show, you guys obviously make a bit of this with the Texans.
Swarm.
Yeah.
But, like, watching the Texans defense last night, like, there is legit. Yeah, it's legit to, like, put the Swarm label on them. Because there was so many times when it was almost like, you know, like a drop of blood and water around Sharks, and they snap to it and they instantly attack. Anytime there was any sort of dump off or scramble for Fields, or they identified run, it was amazing to see the linebackers and the secondary, how fast those guys would just swarm to the ball and hit and be physical, bring the guy down and make sure they set themselves up to force the Steelers to punt. I was very impressed with how quick and instinctive and reactionary the Texans defense was last night.
Yeah, we've been talking to DJ BNMA and Paul, who back when the Texans were practicing in Houston was going to the training camp practices the first week or two of training camp. And basically every day one of them would come back and say, yeah, man, the defense kicked the offense ass at practice today.
That's what we've heard. And, yeah, same thing.
And I was jokingly, I was just like, well, that just means the defense is awesome. And seeing it against another team, I think this defense has a real chance just to be awesome. At the very least, the front seven, the pass rush of just giving opposing offensive lines just a tough time.
I mean, it's pretty crazy to think that, like, how good the offense was last year, and then you could argue that they improved, but it's like the defense is what everybody is like
different planet
talking
last year
about. Yeah. Like, it's almost like the defense is getting more hype than the offense. And I was watching practice videos maybe from yesterday or 2 days before, and Stingley, my goodness, I mean, the dude was everywhere.
Yeah,
like everywhere.
And he was in the game last, you know what I noticed, that was another thing I wanted to point out, and we'll get back into the defense overall here in a second. And if, again, if you have thoughts, text us or call us on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. But because there was a couple times where I'd rewind and just kind of watch Stingley, see what he looked like in coverage. And look, I don't want to put Stingley Island on him. I don't want to make comparisons to other great cornerbacks, but you could tell it's just like, look, the Steelers don't have the best wide receiver crew in the league for sure. We'll see if they end up getting Brandon Ayuk. I mean, George Pickens is okay, but overall their wide receiver group's not elite, especially after losing Deontay Johnson. But in the snaps last night that Derek Stingley had, I mean, Derek Stingley is with whoever he's guarding step for step. There was never a moment where he looked like, okay, this guy's about to shake him. It seemed like he was perfectly set up in his technique. Like he, from his film study, he knew what the guy was going to try to do to him. And he was stride for stride every step the wide receivers took when he was in coverage.
And you think about someone like Stingley, who's been dealing with injuries, obviously missed the first part of last season with injuries. I wonder how much of that's just confidence of
it could be.
Having a full, healthy offseason under your belt and being able to not only, you know, stay healthy and you're not rehabbing, you're getting better. And I wonder if not only is he getting better, but he also knows that he's getting better from a guy who is already pretty good his second year in the league.
It's pretty quick how that whole Sauce Gardner should have drafted him talk has faded out
it's
of
gone.
The picture. Yeah,
at least for me, I'll say it's gone.
I think it's a situation where if you take Sauce over Stingley, you are saying it's because Stingley missed time his first 2 years in the league, or year and a half, really, in the league, where I think if Stingley puts a season of 16-game season under his belt, stays healthy, is out there for all the games, I think that takes that argument away from him, and we could be talking about Stingley was the right choice.
Yeah, there's certainly going to be some of the, you know, the talking head shows. Like, if Stingley has the type of season that we think he's capable of having, the type of season he had the second half of last year when he came back from the hamstring injury that delayed his start to the 2023 season. There are going to be people on talking head shows that will have that conversation. I don't know if the national media is there yet because Sauce is such a big star. And he had such a great rookie season.
Yeah.
But I mean, Stingley had 5 interceptions last year. I don't think he's going to. And John Harris pointed this out on the broadcast. I don't think Stingley gets to 5 interceptions again, or even has a chance to top that, because my
ball's not gonna go his way.
Exactly. That was my thought coming out of the game from Stingley's, like, when you factor in how good he looks and then how many question marks we have on the other guys in the secondary, especially with that second corner spot. I mean, we'll see with Kamari Lassiter. Obviously, the reviews on him have been pretty glowing so far. But even if Kamari Lassiter is good, he's still a rookie. Teams just aren't going to throw at Derek Stingley. So, I do dread, though, the conversations or people calling like, oh, Derek Stingley only has one interception this year. Terrible. Like, because they're not going to throw to him.
I feel like secondary stats can be very misleading because it was like 2 years ago, it was like, oh, Jalen Petrie led the league in tackles. That's not good.
That's not good.
Safety.
Yeah,
like,
right.
That's really not good at all. So just because your leading cornerback doesn't have five or six interceptions, having one or two could arguably be even better because that means you know that nobody is throwing his direction.
Yeah, no, 100%. And so, I mean, just quickly wrap up the thoughts on the defense before we go to the offensive side. Texans last year finished 11th in points allowed, and I had this conversation with the Killer Bees a few weeks ago. My cash to trash it was I thought the Texans were going to finish top five in points allowed. I thought at the time that was a little bit of a spicy take, but look, again, obviously, grain of salt. It's two quarters against the Steelers, but not even ignoring the fact that it was two quarters against Steelers, just looking at how well particular guys played. With Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson and Derek Stingley, Azeez Al-Shaair looked extremely quick and instinctive. I think that's legit. I wouldn't say I'd be disappointed like if they had the six scoring defense, but my expectation I think is now firmly moved into the I expect them to be a top five defense this year as far as points allowed. Fair.
It's tough because of the schedule they're going to have to play.
Okay. Yeah.
That's my only...
Mahomes, the Dolphins, and the Ravens. Yeah.
That's my Burrow. Only pushback. They also get the Bills, who we'll see. The Jets, we'll see. There's a lot of teams that can be very good. I think definitely the first part of the season when they're playing the Bears, the Commanders, the Vikings, they're going to give those guys a tough time. I'll tell you that right now. They're going to give... the rookie quarterbacks, or if it's Sam Darnold and whoever else, they're trotting out there to start two games before going to the rookie. I think those guys are going to have a tough time against the Texans. The more elite quarterbacks that they play later in the season, that's where I just want to see a little bit more than, like you said, a quarter and a half, two quarters against Justin Fields.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty fair.
But your take does look better than it did on Thursday.
Yeah, let's get over to the offense quickly before we take our break here. Obviously, the offense also only in the field for two drives, and the first one was pretty quick. I think it was a three and out. They certainly didn't move the ball much, even if they got a first down. I don't remember if they technically did or not. But they come out for that second drive. It was another quick series. I believe it was only a three-play scoring drive before C.J. Stroud hits Tank Dell on the touchdown, but just specifically looking at that CJ to Tank touchdown throw. One, I mean, you're glad just to see Tank on the field with all that he went through this offseason to see him look healthy and hopefully not blocking around the goal line. But on that throw itself, because there was a couple moments, like there was a play where CJ like rolled out and got pressured and had to throw the ball away. There was a couple moments early where they looked a little rusty. The running game wasn't good, but on that pass from CJ to Tank, the anticipation CJ showed, and you see the replay from behind the quarterback, the hole that he had to fit that into, the window in the zone was extremely small. And then obviously Tank, for a guy that's what, 5'9", 160, to break multiple tackles and kind of bulldoze his way into the end zone, just an incredible play, and has me completely hyped up that this offense, despite hearing how bad it's been during training camps, like, that's just because they're facing the Texas defense. They're going to be fine.
Yeah, that definitely, again, that point has a little bit more credence now that we see him against another team, or at least that first team defense against another team. I get, because we did see him in the Hall of Fame game, but whatever, it's the Hall of Fame game. Tank Dell, man, man, Tank Dell's awesome. That's not really a blazing hot take, but just seeing him back out there, it really puts in perspective what the Texans lost last year when he went down with that injury. And, of course, that last year's team had way less firepower than this year's team looks like it's going to have. So I think it really puts into context what was really going on, not just last year, but also what we have to look forward to this year with, I mean, with these three wide receivers. It's a very surface level take.
Who has a better wide receiver trio on the league?
Yeah, exactly. We were talking about that yesterday. The only case is for better receiving core because Tank Dell was talking about it on a podcast. Or the guys where it's, well, I'd take the top two right. over the two.
Yeah, but, like a Tyreek and Waddle or Chase and
Higgins.
And Higgins. Yeah,
Smith and Brown for the Eagles. Yeah, Cooper Kupp and Nakua was one that we forgot about.
Well, yeah, now Nakua's dealing with the high ankle sprain, so we'll see.
But when you take them as a three-man unit, there's really, I don't know if there's a team that stacks up to them.
But I feel like you could even rotate one of them out and they would still be...
They'd still be up
there. Yeah, you can still let's just eliminate Diggs from it. I would still feel fine putting Nico in Tank. They probably wouldn't be top five at that point.
Yeah, they'd be
because of all the names we just mentioned.
In the 5 to 10 range.
Or, yeah, exactly. Yeah. They'd be 5 to 10 range. I mean, it'd still be take any two of those and they would fit right into the top 5 to 10 easily. And then you factor in you got another one that's just as good. So, all right, we got plenty more of Texans conversation. We'll hold it over to the other side of the break. Want to talk about one more thing on Tank Dell with his usage, and then maybe we'll get into some of the other things we saw last night in Texans versus Steelers. Astros coming up in the 12:30 segment, and in the second hour, we, of course, have our big question in Mount Rushmore, plus one at 1:30. But don't go anywhere. We're talking more Texans Steelers when we get back on the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back into The Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. If you want to give any thoughts on what you saw from Texans Steelers last night, give us a text or a call at 713-780-3776. Got a comment on the text line that I'll read here in a moment, but I want to take a second to congratulate John and Lance for getting nominated and eventually inducted into the Texas Sports Hall of Fame. I don't know when that. Do you know when that ceremony is? I know it's in like 2-3 hours away. It's a little bit of a drive.
November.
Is it November?
I believe in Kilgore, Texas.
Kilgore, Texas. That sounds right. But
well-deserved.
Well-deserved. I'll just speak for myself because I think the other guys with me on the show weren't alive when John and Lance started the radio career. Or if they were, they were very, very young. But John and Lance, starting with sports radio, well, I almost gave out the full thing. I'll just say the Texans flagship. That's kind of the more radio PC way to do things, not to name out your competitor. But John and Lance on the Texans flagship, along with Jim Rome back in the day, are what really got me into sports radio. I have fond memories driving around the car when I was cleaning pools as a teenager, listening to John Lance in the morning, getting me through the day. Just absolutely sounded when you turned them on, it completely sounded different than anything else I'd heard from sports radio. It was I hate to use the term ahead of its time because it's so cliche, but it was so different and so unique. And obviously the staying power starting off in 1997, still here today. I mean, I wouldn't be doing this if it weren't for John Lance. Like I said, but John Lance, Jim Rome, they were completely different than anything I had heard in sports radio before then. Got me to love it, and congratulations. Well deserved for them getting into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I second everything that you said.
Except for listening to them in 1997?
Yes, except for that part. I don't know. Maybe my dad was.
Maybe your dad was?
Yeah, maybe I was in the car seat. When I was in college, in Austin, I was itching for some Houston sports talk in my life. And when I was itching for it, I would listen to the John Lance, The Bench, back in the day. Right. Real ones know The Bench.
Yeah.
And I would listen to their podcast. And as I was walking to class to be a broadcast professional, I was listening to those guys basically break all the rules that they're telling us in that class. And so to, intern here, eventually work with them. And now, rightfully so, they're Hall of Famers. Congratulations.
Yeah, well deserved. All right, let's get back into the Texans. So we mentioned Tank Dell with the receiving touchdown in last night's game in one of the two series they had before the starters were pulled. One of the other ways Tank Dell was used last night, I think it's going to have a few people wringing their hands, you know, pearl clutching, whatever term you want to use, because Tank Dell was then as a punt returner. And after we saw Tank Dell's season end early last year when, I mean, this is not punt returning, when he was used as an interior blocker on a goal line play. I still can't believe Bobby Slowick did that. But I'm sure there was more than a few people, including one of my hosts on the Killer Bees, Jeremy Branham, who were very upset to see Tank Dell as a punt returner because they don't want to risk a playmaker at wide receiver that important to the team on punt plays. Where do you guys stand on not only Tank Dell as a punt returner, but maybe even using guys like Tank Dell or others, because I don't think was Sims, the wide receiver, is going to make the team. They have too many wide receivers from the Mates team. I think you're going to see some stars, not only because Sims isn't going to make the team, but because the kickoff return could be so much more valuable with the new rules. What do you think of guys like Dell being used in the new kick return and then punt return last night?
I mean, I get the concern, but at the same time, he got injured on a blocking play. Like, he's dynamite.
Yeah, blocking between the tackles.
Yeah, he's a dynamite returner, and if you don't have anybody better, like, special teams is crucial. Like, where you obviously land with the ball is crucial. And so, like, Tank Dell was a monster at returning in college. If he's going to do the exact same stuff in the NFL, I say let him go. Let him loose.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, the play where he broke his leg, like anyone would have broken their leg.
Nico Collins would have broken his leg, and he's 6'4". It doesn't even matter what the size is. I mean, someone just rolled on his leg.
Yeah, so I think, like Cam said, we saw what he could do at U of H as a returner, gain the ball in his hands in that situation. I will say, probably don't need to see him for the rest of preseason returning kicks.
That's fair.
I'm good on that.
Yeah, that I can go with.
But with what you're saying with the roster crunch of these wide receivers, they need to decide who to keep, who to cut. Steven Sims might not always be there to return those kicks. So if you have someone like Dell who can do it, might as well put the ball in his hands, get some good field position while you can.
Yeah, we were talking about this some during the break, and if you want to give us a call, looks like we're getting a call now on the HRP listener line. Please do so, 713-780-3776. But, you eliminate the risk. I get the idea of any play where he's not on the field is a play where he can't get hurt. So by removing punt and kick returns, you're lowering the amount of plays he can get hurt. But at the same time, I mean, Tank Dell, if the concern is, oh, he's so small, he could get hurt. Well, he could get hurt as a receiver. Like, there's no guarantee that he can't get hurt, getting tackled, dragged down, like someone horse collars him.
Yeah. The play that he scored a touchdown on.
Yeah, someone goes high-low on him injured. Yeah. There's so many ways he could get hurt. Like, the idea that removing him from punt and kick return is just going to completely eliminate his, the risk of him getting hurt is absurd. He's just as likely to get a hurt on any individual receiving play. So if you got a dynamic weapon, use him.
Yeah. Well, we saw he got hurt off the field, too. So, when he got shot. So, I mean,
come on, Cam.
I'm just saying, like, I understand the concern, but, like, you do what you got to do to win. And, like, his senior year, I think he only returned, like, 10 or 11 punts, but he averaged, like, 18 yards a punt return.
And that's a good point,
which is phenomenal.
Cam, you don't have to, like, using him in kick and punt return, and, again, like, if you're looking at just any individual play, any individual passing play versus any individual return play, he's no more likely to get hurt on one versus the other. But to your point, Cam, using him on punt and kick returns doesn't mean he has to be the only guy to do all of it.
No.
Like, you can use him. Like, I remember back in the day, Danielle Manning would only occasionally return kicks, but he was really good at it. So, if they same thing with Will Fuller. He wasn't used all the time as the punt returner, but if they needed a big play, if they were behind, then they would put him in and see if he could make things happen. That's how I think that the tank usage should happen.
It's something that happens in college, too, a lot, where a lot of times the best player on your team is your best receiver, and he should also, or running back.
Xavier Worthy at Texas.
And he should also return kicks, but sometimes you just want more of a punt returner that, like your fourth receiver.
A sacrificial lamb.
Yeah, your fourth receiver. Well, also, most of the time you're going to fair catch it anyway.
Yeah, not less this year, obviously. All right, let's go out to the HRP listener line. We got Jason in New Orleans wants to talk about Tank Dell returning kicks in the preseason. Jason, what do you got for us? Jason, going once, twice, and gone. All right, well, Jason's takes quite spicy today. Unfortunately, we weren't, and he is officially gone. So yeah, I just overall look. I mean, that was a rack 'em. That was a great take. That was a great take. I get the concern. Tank Dell is an itty bitty boy, and everyone's worried, and they want to put him in bubble wrap that he's going to get hurt on any play, but he's no more likely to get hurt on a punt play versus a receiving play. So, one question I had for you guys on the Texans, I'm curious to get your thoughts on before we move on to the Astros next segment. And again, obviously coming up in the hour two, all our usual hits. We got our big question coming up at 1:15. We got some hype train, some Why So Serious at 1 o'clock, and of course Mount Rushmore plus one at 1:30. But we've heard, I think, from there's been more and more national media coming up, starting to have some takes about. Oh, we got Jason back on the line. All right, Jason, I believe you're calling for New Orleans, wanting to talk about the Tank Dell return situation. What do you got for us?
Hi, you can hear me now?
Yeah, we got you.
Gotcha. So my issue, I'm a Saints fan, but watching the Texans, you know, impedes whether or not I have happiness at work because all my coworkers are Texas fans. So my issue is if Tank Dell is that dynamic and that great, cool, use him in punt returns, but not in the first preseason game.
Yeah.
And that's fair. Yeah, I remember which one of us said that, but that is completely fair, and we agree with that, Jason. Thank you for your call. If you want to also get in on the HRP listener line, give us a call or text 713-780-3776. I think, look, I'm okay with the risk there of Tank being used in kick and punt return in the regular season because, like Cam pointed out, he was a dynamic playmaker doing that in college at the University of Houston, but it's a preseason game. Like, yeah. I mean, if we're really for the starters, everything is about you want to get a few reps so they're not rusty, but you got to limit some risk. I would have been okay with Tank not returning one for real until the regular season started.
Yeah, cool. That's perfectly well said. Like Jason said, cool to see him do it. It was great. Don't need to see it again until week one.
Let Juwan Jordan like. Yeah, give
let
it a Jar shot Jordan.
Dude, let yeah. someone else.
Let Damien Pierce.
Yeah, Damien Pierce.
I mean, yeah, well, he returned kicks last year. He had a return touchdown against the Browns.
So my boy true. Ben Skoranek Cook.
Yeah, I mean they traded for him, so why not?
I mean, hell, the best returner on the team. We haven't even talked about him, Andrew Beck. Hook him.
Yeah,
I mean they could have used him in kickoff returns. Yeah. I mean, the greatest play of the 2023 season, Andrew Beck with the kickoff return against the Jaguars.
I don't know about the greatest play.
That was the greatest play of the season, Johnny Bellmer. Don't you dare say otherwise.
The Tank Dell touchdown to win in the last second against Tampa Bay is better.
No.
Non-divisional game. Non-divisional game.
I think this is some anti-Longhorn bias. I know what's going on here. You are a hater, Johnny Bellmer.
No stage is bigger.
I'm with you, Johnny.
Appreciate it, Cam.
Yeah, I'm not going to listen to
no the stage is bigger
crew.
Than Texans-Jags week 3 at noon, M&T Bank
the
Field.
House that Trevor Lawrence – no, the house that Mark Brunell built.
I don't think they've gotten a new stadium.
not Byron Leftwich?
No, Byron Leftwich was later. Byron Leftwich was later, yeah.
Because the house that Keenan McCardell built.
the house that Fred Taylor built.
I was going to say Fred Taylor. I mean
– shout out to Cecil Shorts.
Oh,
Fred was pretty sick.
Yeah, no, they had some really good players back. Hell, even Mark Brunell, there was one game, I think this was in Houston, where he had like 24 straight completions. The Texans defense was just ass that day. Yeah. All right, enough Texans for now. We had some more thoughts, but there's stuff that'll save for future weeks. Let's get into the Astros on the other side of the break. Talk about this Astros-Red Sox game with the bats breaking out last night, getting a big win on the road. And talk about some other things, Yiner Diaz as well with the big home run. Kind of his season this year versus last year when the bullpen returns on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
And drives this one deep to left field, all the way back and gone. Over the monster for a tying two-run home run. We're knotted up at three. Altuve hitting his 15th home run of the year. Yiner drives one deep to left field. Well over the monster, out of the stadium. A two-run bomb by Yiner Diaz. And the Astros up big now. It's 8-3.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back into the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. That, of course, courtesy of Space City Home Network, the voice of Todd Cowles, which you can hear on the Killer Bees every Friday at 4 o'clock, sometimes 4:30, depends on what Todd's going on. But a great call there of that Yonder Diaz, before that Jose Altuve home run. But the Yonder Diaz home run, my God. Yeah, I mean, his home, and we'll talk about it in a minute, his home run power hasn't been there as much as it was last season. But that one, I mean, cleared the big green monster, was like over a sign and out of the stadium over to Yawkey Way or whatever it is.
They changed the name, but yes.
Yeah, whatever. And it's some Boston BS. But, I mean, just one of the most crushed baseballs I've seen this season. Yonder Diaz just absolutely smoked it.
Safe to say he got a hold of
that monster.
Yeah. What's that, Cam?
I was saying a monster over the monster.
Yeah.
All right. Well done.
5.5.
We were joking about you doing stand up on the brick wall behind us. I don't know if that bit would kill though.
I'm not a stand up type person.
If you're going to go to the improv, we're going to have to up your game for Monster Over the Monster.
I'm not a stand up guy.
We needed the
you're not. Many people
Seinfeld.
Said that. Yeah.
We needed the Seinfeld. Boom 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 boom.
No, thank you.
What's the deal with monsters over the monster? Anyway, all right. So the Astros get a big win last night. Break out the bats. And obviously this has been a extremely tight race so far with the Seattle Mariners. They had pulled ahead briefly a few weeks ago, then they hit the skids and dropped behind the Mariners, now in a virtual tie. They've played two less games, the Mariners, but technically ahead on winning percentage, 60-55, while the Mariners are 61-56, but the winning percentage for the Astros, 0.001 higher. So just overall, I know this season has obviously had a lot of lows in April and May, and then since then it's kind of been a roller coaster of the ups and downs. But you know, they get the series win at home before they go on the road, in Texas and Arlington. Feels like home because they play so well there. Then they go on the road last night and get the opening game of the Red Sox series. How are we feeling overall right now with the Astros in regards to just how well they're playing or not playing in this case? Well. And the race against the Mariners.
You got to feel good because the Mariners are going to keep you in it no matter how bad you play.
Offense is so bad.
It's something where if they're in any other division, they'd be like 5.5 back at the very least. But luckily, they're in the AFC West or AL West here.
Doesn't matter, Brian.
Yeah, the AL South.
AL West champions.
They're in the AL South. Yeah. But I think you feel pretty good about where they're at. I think a lot of it has to do with, I mean, it's so bipolar with the bats where they have a series and a half of no run support for anybody, and then they drop an 8 spot on.
It was like 16 hits, too.
Yeah, on the Red Sox. And honestly, a lot of that, what I was most kind of, encouraged by was that in that 8 runs, 16 hit performance they had last night, it was a little bit of everybody getting in on it. It was one big inning, but it was one very big inning.
Yeah, with pretty much everybody. I mean,
and getting guys on, moving across, like it was a lot of runs and scoring, a lot of hits with runners in scoring position, a lot of singles leading to moving station by station. You know, they don't play baseball this way anymore. But yeah, that seventh inning was.
I do miss small ball, Sean.
I was hoping for a bunt or two.
Yeah, you bunt a guy, get on, bunt the guy over, hit the other way, and then they
sack fly.
Yeah, sack fly. That's what you do. Manufacturers runs, baby.
Yeah, but I think it's a situation where, you know, Altuve obviously had the big home run. Bregman had 3 hits. Alvarez had 2 hits. Yiner had 2 hits and the home run. Singleton had 2 hits. Pena had 3 hits. Myers had 2 hits. Like it was a very
even guys like Pena who have been struggling recently were involved. Like the only guy that really didn't get involved, and let's touch on this one right now.
Oh yeah.
But Mauricio Dubon 0-for-4 last night, and he there's no other way to say it. He has absolutely sucked for the last few months. Like the first. And he's had a couple seasons of doing this where he kind of fools us into believing, like, hey, this guy's got really good, you know, bat to ball skills. He's
kinda did last
contact year. Hitter. He's going to hit for a decent average. He may not walk, but he'll hit for a decent average. Like he comes into June, hitting like 315. And we were all obviously over the moon with his performance. But you look at Mauricio Dubon since then, since June 1st, he's hitting 215 with a 572 OPS. That's Maldonado levels. That is an awful OPS. And 162 game pace of 6 home runs, 45 RBI during that time. So, look, the Astros have obviously experimented with bringing up a lot of guys like DeCenzo before they traded him off, Loprofito. There's obviously been lots of guys they've kind of brought in and out from Triple A. Maybe Shea Whitcomb's on his way in the not so distant future. But I don't know. I'm kind of over playing Mauricio Dubon very much right now. I don't know what the other options are because Chaz McCormick has also sucked, but I don't really want to see Dubon in the lineup very often right now.
Yeah, that relationship of being a bestie with Yordan is starting to wear down its lore though. But yeah, that's the problem. Who else are you going to put in for him?
There's not a great answer unless you bring somebody up. But I mean,
you know, last year he was super consistent, and then he started the season that way. I think it's fair to say maybe we just, you know, be a little more patient with him and see if he can get it back on track.
Over 2 months now.
Though. No, I know.
It's not. I mean, you would be 100% right if it was like 2 weeks. Like that, I would it's a slump. Everyone goes through.
Or if it was like the beginning of the season when everybody was struggling.
Like Bregman did.
But now it's like, it's clutch time. Like now you're pushing to make the playoffs. And if you're...
Yeah, you're in a virtual tie with the Mariners. You don't have time to wait.
If you're going 0-4 and 1-5 every game, like you are literally... You're being Abreu. Like you're not bringing anything to the team.
Send him to Miami?
Sure. Yeah. Get some swings in
against some single A players. Yeah. Get his confidence back, or they come back and do the exact same thing. Yeah. Yeah. Look, there's not a lot of great options. Like the answer or the question would obviously be when I say, hey, you struggle, be like, all right, well, who do you want instead? Like you said, Kim,
Tucker.
Sorry?
Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, I'll take him back.
Yeah, there we go.
Kyle Tucker, who might not return now this season.
How many legs does Kyle Tucker currently have? Do we know?
At least one. I feel confident saying one plus.
One. Can he feel it? Can he wiggle his toes on that injured leg?
I'll wait to see what Dana has to say tomorrow about it. But I think that's...
Yeah, to your point, though, to be real about
it. Started in right field last night.
When Tucker comes back, it doesn't matter, but...
Not that it doesn't matter, but you get a lot less of Dubon and McCormick, who, to me, have been kind of the chief disappointments, the chief and lieutenant disappointments for this season.
Who's Colonel disappointment?
Colonel disappointment. Oh, maybe Drake Myers.
That was Abreu before they let him go.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. He was dishonorably discharged,
president disappointment.
He was dishonorably discharged. I think some of the, obviously, it's still one hitter coming back with Kyle Tucker coming back, if he comes back, when he comes back.
But he has a leg.
Yes, but I do think that it just bumps everyone down a notch on the depth chart, where now maybe Dubon goes from starting more often than not than to being the more more utility
days
bench
off
man,
guy.
Bench off.
Yeah. Like he was last year.
Yeah, like he was last year. Go back into that role. I feel like some of his struggles is just how overstretched he's been as of late.
All right, so someone else has been struggling. We've talked about it a few times, but, I mean, as long as it keeps happening, I guess it's worth mentioning. Ronel Blanco, a bit of a struggle last night. Only goes 4 innings because he gets his pitch count up to 88, and they decide to pull him. During that time of those 4 innings, he gives up 4 hits, 3 walks, so 7 runners allowed during those 4 innings. We've just seen as he gets closer and closer, I believe now just like 2 innings away from his previous high, career high in innings pitch, his effectiveness has just dropped off. The velocity's dropped. The effectiveness has dropped off. Last 8 starts for Ronel Blanco, his ERA is 4.36. Look, I mean, they don't have the luxury right now of doing anything other than just continuing to running him out there, and hopefully they can limit his innings and save some of this for, you know, October. But I have to say, with a look towards October, and obviously the returns are very early for this guy, but I think I'm at the point where I trust Yusei Kikuchi right now way more than I do the version that we've seen of Renee Blanco over the last month and a half.
Yeah, Renee Blanco might be...
Is he JP France?
Yeah, I was going to say he might be doing the JP France turning into a pumpkin. And listen, what both those guys did, what France did last year, what Renee did this year, I mean, Renee to a much... I would say a much greater extent.
Oh, much greater.
They did provide something that this team needed, and that was good starting pitching early in the season as the Astros were kind of clobbered by injuries to the staff. But this is kind of what happens when guys are late bloomers, I'll say, that are getting their first real shot in the bigs in JP France's case, his late 20s, and Ronel Blanco's case when 30. He's 30. And when you start blowing past these innings, the level of innings that they're pitching in a single year, it starts to slow down a little. They start to run out of a little bit of gas. Part of it might also be the league kind of gets more tape on you,
sure.
And you're not catching as many people by surprise anymore. So I think what Ronel Blanco did for this Astros team early in the season shouldn't be forgotten. With that being said, I'm glad they traded for Yusei Kikuchi to knock Blanco down a rung in the staff rotation.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of reminds me a few years ago when Brad Peacock kind of came out of that bullpen role and started and
had
a really
great
good
2017.
He's
on the World Series team.
Had a good couple stretches of starting pitching, and then you could tell the innings were just eating him. And I know last week I said that I wasn't too concerned about Blanco, but after this last start, the fact that he's only gone over six innings one time the last eight games, like that does kind of concern me. And like, I know he was hardly going over six innings earlier in the year, but at least earlier in the year, it was one run, two runs allowed.
Yeah.
Now it's three, four. Like, he's not putting good starts together. And I do think that now the innings are starting to catch up with him.
Yeah, no, 100%. He's getting to the point where, like, Spencer Arrighetti's on the mound tonight for the Astros. And I do still trust Renee Blanco than I do Arrighetti. But Arrighetti's had a couple of really good starts recently. He had like a 12-strikeout performance, like what, it's just a start or two ago?
Yeah.
And he's a rookie who you'd expect, while Renee Blanco at age 30, as he reaches his previous career high in innings, you would expect maybe some regression there to start to take over because he wasn't a prospect. He wasn't a guy expected to do this. Whereas the inverse of that is Arrighetti, someone who wasn't, you know, a top 100 prospect, but someone who's definitely been on the Astros' radar, seen as a potential starter in the big leagues. As he gets more mature, more seasoning, he's going to start to, you know, potentially play even better, be on his way up while Renee Blanco is on the way down. So I'm even getting close to the point of like, I'd rather see Arrighetti right now than Renee Blanco.
Yeah, and that some of that's just the difference of being, like you said, a first-time full-time starter when you're 30 versus being a first-time full-time starter when you're 24.
Yeah, exactly.
And
it's a big difference.
The arrow is kind of pointing up with Arrighetti. The arrow's kind of pointing down with Blanco of late.
The good news is, Sean, I mean, you're 28. You still got time. I mean, Renee Blanco's 30.
I think,
you got time to make your way to the majors.
I think if the Astros added me to the rotation, things would go pretty poorly.
You think so?
I don't think I'll even have the April and May.
What's the
Blanco
RPMs? What are you throwing these days? Have you been clocked? What's the fastball say?
I don't know. I
have you guys ever done one of those the pitching where they have the speed camera that times you?
I pitched my senior year of high school.
Did you?
And I was not a fastball pitcher. The highest I think I clocked in was 79, but I did have a pretty nice curve and knuckle. Mm. But
more of a
you were Jamie Mooring out there.
More of a Maddox than
a Clemens. A lot of junk out there.
Then my arm, my elbow became a noodle.
No,
yeah,
it became a noodle after you were throwing 70-mile-an-hour heat.
It became a noodle after I was throwing a bunch of curve and knuckleballs.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, it's probably not great for you at what, 17?
It was not.
Yeah, it's probably not great. It's probably not great on the arm. All right, we'll carry over the Astros conversation to the other side. We'll talk some more about Yonder Diaz, some of the differences between last year, this year. Another Astro with a great run of success so far over the last few weeks. And then a question about the Astros' playoffs hopes overall when we get back on the bullpen. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. This is The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. If you want to get in the conversation, currently talking Astros, their big win last night over the Red Sox, and some of the good and bad performances that we've seen trending over the last few weeks, give us a call or a text on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776, that is. It's Brian McDonald with you here on Twitter, at SackByBMAC. Cam Smith, to my right, can be found on Twitter, at ClutchCityCam, and Sean Mapes at the end of the desk, found on Twitter, at Sean A. Mapes, and of course, Johnny Bellmer behind the glass is found on Twitter, at Third Coast Johnny. So we kind of touched on this a little bit last segment, and I'm curious to get your guys' thoughts. I believe Cam kind of mentioned it in passing, but I've kind of got the feeling as the Astros, I mean, look, if you look at standings right now, Astros in first place. So I think a lot of the optimistic, orange-colored glasses wearing fans would point to that as like, hey, they're in first place. You know, why would you feel anything but optimistic? But it kind of feels like Astros fans right now are falling into the same trap that maybe Tampa Bay Buccaneers fans fell into last year. Like, okay, you technically are in first, but if you're in any other division, like the Astros would be like 7-8 games or more out of first place in any other division in baseball. So it kind of feels like, and it's hard to kind of, you know, juxtapose against their long track record of postseason success, because I'm sure a lot of people say, well, just get in. We know this team has the postseason pedigree to once they get in to make something happen. But, I mean, no one thought the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were going to do anything when they got into the postseason, even though they end up winning a playoff game. You don't take those teams from crappy conferences. Like, I mean, remember Eastern Conference basketball forever, unless it was LeBron's team. I mean, half the teams getting in were under 500. You didn't take any of them seriously. Are Texans fans maybe being lulled into Astros fans being lulled into a false level of confidence as they're poised to take control and possibly win this crappy division?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, I get that they've had in years past, they've had like disappointing regular seasons and they've still slid into the postseason and done something. But this just, there's something about this season that just doesn't give me the same vibe. And I think a lot of it's like just the starting pitching. Like you just don't have that lethal lineup of starting pitchers that you used to, that you could count on in the postseason when you're doing 5-game series, 7-game series. Like they don't have that. So I think that they ultimately get into the postseason, but there's nothing dangerous about this team, I feel like. You know what I mean? Like in years past, you could point to something and be like, oh, but they have this, they have that, they have that. It's just like, I can't put my finger on anything this year.
I disagree a little bit just because of the nature of what postseason baseball is. And like Cam kind of alluded to, they've won 90 games last year, which to their standard isn't high. Now, I don't think they're on pace to win 90 this year.
No, we're going to lose our bet, unfortunately, in the Birds, which was it 92 and a half?
And a half.
Yeah, we're going to lose that bet. We're going to lose that bet.
But you also think about, and this is a little bit different because they only played 60 games, but in 2020, they're under 500.
Two games under and then got in because of the expanded playoff field.
And make the ALCS. Push it to a game seven. Yeah. So I do think that there's some level of trust you have in this group of postseason performers of when kind of it gets into that postseason grind. This is a team and a franchise that just have always won playoff series. So there, I trust them a little bit more in a playoff setting than in a regular season setting. I think that they can be a better team. Especially if and when they get healthier with Justin Verlander's going to make a rehab start today.
Yeah.
You can hear it on ESPN 92.5 with the Space Cowboys. But and we've already mentioned Kyle Tucker coming back. We'll see if Kyle Tucker comes back. But if you add Tucker and Verlander to this team, I feel pretty good walking into a playoff series with who the Astros would have against any of these other teams in the AL.
And that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I do have, like, this team as currently constructed, the guys on the roster right now, I would probably lean towards, like, this is kind of Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Like, I don't have they're just kind of beating the other poor teams right now. They're not really at the same level the other contenders. But if you do get, you know, a Verlander back, who's like Sean said, making a start today for the Sugar Land Space Cowboys, supposed to need one more after that, and then would return to the big league club. You eventually, let's say you get Kyle Tucker back, you know, second week of September, he's able to get going and find a rhythm before the postseason. Then, yeah, I do think this is a team that is better than just a bad team winning a bad division and could compete for something in the American League, because not only would this team then have, obviously, a deeper lineup, a deeper rotation, but when you go into the postseason, especially on the rotation side, the weakness of this rotation isn't, to me, the top end. It's the depth because of the injuries that they've had. Like if they go into the postseason where you go down to four pitchers instead of using five or six in the regular season, and your four is, you know, Verlander, Fromber, Hunter Brown, Yusei Kikuchi, I'm pretty good with that. I mean, I'm pretty good with that. And then obviously you get on top of that, you get potentially, knock on wood, cross your fingers, Kyle Tucker back. And oh, by the way, you look at the American League and look. There are teams that are pretty good, but the Mariners have no offense. I mean, the Guardians haven't really been there. They haven't gone through the wars. They don't have the experience in the postseason the Astros do. Same thing with the Twins, who the Astros beat in the postseason last year. The Orioles completely flamed out after winning 100 games last year, getting knocked out in the first round series against the Rangers last season. And then there's, oh yeah, the Yankees, who the Astros have dominated and been in their heads since 2015. So I do think if the Astros get mostly fully healthy, which doesn't include Luis Garcia or Lance McCullers because they're never coming back, or at least Lance is never coming back. But if they get Tucker and Verlander back and win this division, I do have some confidence that they can make a run at it and get to potentially an 8th straight ALCS.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I have confidence.
No, you're a hater.
But there's
you're
no, a hater. There's
we've
just,
established this.
Hey. There's so many ifs.
Hater!
If Kyle Tucker comes back healthy,
hater.
If Verlander comes back and is healthy,
hater.
If Hunter Brown can
Josh
keep
hater.
This streak
hater.
Up, if I mean, and that's the thing, we're already seeing Blanco crumble, so it's just
hater.
Like there's so many ifs with this team. That is my concern. Like in years past, where we're at now, I don't remember there being this many ifs, and right now there are so many ifs with this team. That is why I'm concerned about a playoff run.
By the way, you want to say hater? That is actually a real issue. Like I'm worried about Josh Hader. And the backside of that bullpen. He hasn't been where we thought he would be. He's done well.
He's actually got like the lowest whip he's had in like four seasons.
Yeah, and he,
now
and
I will give you this point, John.
Pushing Lidge's record too.
He has had a lot of moments where they have like a 3-run lead. And he gives up a solo homer.
Yeah,
and that makes the overall numbers, especially ERA, not look so great. But I don't know. I don't have. Now I would say I'm more confident in Brian Abreu. Than Josh Hader. So if you want to make that point, I'm okay with that. I mean, Hader or Abreu hasn't given up a run in his last 11 appearances, so he's been amazing. But I don't have a lot of fear when Josh Hader goes out there right now, other than if it's a 3-run lead, he's going to make it 2.
Or if it's tied, he's going to make sure they lose.
he's going to at least stress you
but,
out.
But if it's a save situation, boom, you can turn off your TV.
Yeah, he's had what?
25 straight saves?
Yeah, I believe he failed on his first attempt of the season and then has got every save, or converted every save since then. So, all right, let's get out right here on the other side of the break or bring him back. We did this a few weeks ago. I don't remember if Cam, were you here for the last Why So Serious, Cam?
I was not.
So this will be your, this is only episode 2 of Why So Serious. Series featuring someone Sean knows very well. So we're going to have that on the other side of the break. Plus, Hype Train makes its return with some of the crazy reports coming out of the various NFL training camps. That when the bullpen returns on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.